Now, on to the business of the day. We're rocking out.
Feeling like a brand new me and an entourage with the latest beat. And the sun don't shine with the gangsters beat. And we rushing roulette to a game of three. By one, by two, by three, by four. And the sun don't shine, running yo no more. And the girls say, yeah, ain't no more. And we richer than the rich, we ain't poor no more. I ain't been back in a minute, that's crazy. I ain't seen you around, no car, don't page me. Pull up on your block and you never try to fade me. Calm down, all good, baby, it's crazy. I ain't been back in a minute, that's crazy. I ain't seen you around, no car, don't page me. Pull up on your back, don't you ever try to fade me. Calm down, all good, baby, it's crazy.
That's Zulu Screams by Goldlink. The Washington region has a rich musical history, and nostalgia for the golden age of go-go and punk runs deep. Today, though, we're exploring what's happening in D.C. music right now, including the music you just heard at the top of the show, Zulu Screams by Goldlink, and we'll check in on the region's hip-hop, R&B, indie, and yes, go-go and punk scenes. Joining me to discuss all of this is Natalie Hopkinson. She is the author of Go Go Live, The Musical Life and Death of Chocolate City, of A Chocolate City. Natalie, good to see you again.
Good to see you.
Also in studio with us is Tone P. He's an artist and producer. Tone P, thank you for joining us.
Hey, appreciate you for having me. Thank you.
Aaron Frisbee is a musician, board president of This Could Go Boom, member of 06, Fuss Queen, Sanctuary DC, and Girls Rock DC. Aaron Frisbee, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Kayla Randall is the arts editor at Washington City Paper. Kayla Randall, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Tone P, you are from DC. You've made music that crosses genres, merging hip hop with go-go and rock, for example. Mm-hmm. Where do you draw inspiration and why those genres?
Well, I always say, it's a reflection, music in general is a reflection of, you know, what you've been through and what you've experienced, right? And for me, being a kid who was living in Southwest DC amongst the, you know, project setting, and people would call it the hood, you know, and going to school in Georgetown at the same time, I'm not going to explain how that happened, but I was going to go to school in Georgetown up until seventh grade. And then I, went to school from 7th to 12th grade at Jefferson, was, you know, primarily just African-American students in Wilson and Hyde and in Friendship Edison. I went to a lot of schools. Yes, I know.
I noticed, yeah.
And so, for me, I got a lot of rock
influence.
Easier
question for you would be, is there a school in the District of Columbia that you have not attended?
Yes, by the way. You know, for me, I got the rock influence, you know, cause I was in, you know, Georgetown, and it was only, you know, probably for five black kids and like four black Spanish kids and then majority Caucasian kids in the school. So I got the rock influence first, but still living amongst my family and then the people that I lived around when I came home, which were, you know, the go-go community was prevalent. That's all it was there. And so for me, I got both of those doses, you know, with go-go, you know, and go-go music and rock, you know, as my primary influences. Because even back then, hip-hop wasn't as prevalent, you know, as it is now. Because it really was just go-go, to the fact that when hip-hop artists had to come here, you had to perform with a go-go band or you weren't performing.
Is there anything you think that makes music from this region unique?
Yeah. The fact that go-go has had, because it's so dominant here in D.C., you know, it's had two to three records, like Doing a Butt, EU, Chuck Brown, Bustin' Loose. You've had Rare Essence, Overnight Scenario, and those became national hits, but that's just a reflection of what's going on in D.C. But somewhere along the lines, we still need to focus, because those songs were originals, right? And I think, you know, we need to focus more on that.
And creating original music.
Creating original music so we can maximize on, you know, the potential here in D.C. collectively with the, you know, the genre.
Aaron Frisbee, same question to you. As someone who has played in a lot of local bands, started a record label, organized shows, done music education in D.C., but has also lived elsewhere and toured extensively, what do you think makes the community of musicians in Washington different?
I think that, just to add to that, that there is this deep history of community music, mm-hmm. music that's for us, for the people around us, predominantly and foremost, and about us and our stories and who we are. And that, because we have a lot of diverse input, and because people in some ways don't necessarily think of DC as a music town first. They think of us as a political town first, that we've been able to develop really brave music that doesn't suffer from any of the timidity that I've seen in other scenes of people who are really concerned about making a national product rather than something that is part folk music in a way that's really and truly ours. And so I think that's the thing, that it's bold. We tend to say what we mean, and because of that, we've got this just incredibly powerful music.
Kayla Randall, you cover arts and music for Washington City Paper, where you recently shared some of your favorite DC songs of the summer. What is your impression of the state of music in Washington today?
There's an amazing crop of young people making just really excellent hip-hop and R&B music specifically. And like two members of that community just got named to the XXL freshman class, Rico Nasty and YBN Cordae. And they're two amazing artists, and there's such a community feel to it. They'll hop on each other's songs, you know, they'll support each other. They'll have these like bashes, you know, at 9:30 Club and at the Fillmore Silver Spring, where a bunch of DMV artists get together and perform together. And so I feel like there's a lot of community happening. There's a lot of collaboration happening. And there's also just this really powerful energy from this, like the local music community. And I wanted to document that. So that's why I put together my little Songs of the Summer article.
Natalie Hopkinson, you've researched and written about the history of go-go as well as the economic and cultural changes happening in D.C. So same question to you. What do you think of where music is right now in the district, and how does that compare to where it's been in the not-too-distant past that you've written about?
So one of the reasons why I've gotten to know Tone P in the last few months is that we've been involved with Don't Mute D.C., and I'm really hoping that is the beginning of another era of music. So with go-go, each generation sort of has its voice. I was talking to Michelle Blackwell about this recently, and, you know, she talked about Chuck Brown, you know, who was born at a certain time, and then you had the next generation of bands that came under him, like Rare Essence and Trouble Funk, and they had a certain voice and a certain sound. Backyard Band was another wave, and then more recently you had a bounce beat wave that's really struggled, you know, in gentrification over the last you know, couple decades. Like they've really struggled to have a place, the same place like that Tone was talking about, like growing up. And so really what I'm seeing now is just that there's so much more interest and excitement about their music. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what the next generation of musicians, what it sounds like.
Kayla, the artist that we played at the top of the show, Gold Link, made your list for one of the top local artists of the summer. He has a new record out called Diaspora. Who is Gold Link, and why do you like that album so much?
Gold Link is a local rapper. I think he kind of grew up all over the area, like a lot of people do, you know, traversing from Virginia to Maryland to D.C. And I think, so he'd been rapping for a few years, and like a lot of local artists, had a really intensely, you know, feverish local fan base. But then in 2016, in late 2016, he released a single called Crew. And that single just kind of became an anthem for this entire area. And it blew up. And it also featured two other regional artists, Brent Faiyaz and Shy Glizzy. And that song got nominated for a Grammy. Like, it was everywhere. And it's still, to this day, it's a great song. I always listen to that at least once a day. He really stepped his game up this year with Diaspora. I think Diaspora is probably some of his best work to date. It's this sort of cross-genre, you know, blend of, like, Afro beats but also regional stuff, like local stuff, and kind of old-fashioned hip-hop, and like it's just a mix of everything, and it came together so well. And I just think Diaspora is something that everyone should be bumping to this summer.
Aaron Frisbee, Goldlink's album features world music, Afrobeat, hip-hop, and R&B. How much a factor is genre crossing in local DC music?
It's a huge factor, I think. I think that some of the most unique music in the country is being made here because of that exact thing. Some of the bands that I can think of off the top of my head who I just absolutely love would be Black Folks Don't Swim, Also, Lightmare. These are bands that are combining rock and punk and a very punk and indie aesthetic with funk and R&B and soul, and it just grabs people. I think sometimes people can do that in a way that's not very genuine and can sort of just like muddy your palette if you're just mixing all your paint colors together sonically. But we've got some bands here in DC that are grasping onto that in a really knowledgeable and really genuinely connected way, and they're making intense, great music that everybody can really dance to and let loose to.
Tone P, up until recently, the Washington region was not necessarily seen by many people nationally as a place with a strong hip-hop scene, but that seems to be changing as more local rappers are getting wider exposure. Do you think that there is more great hip-hop in the region now, or that there always was and the rest of the world is just catching up to you and Wale?
Okay. I know this isn't... can I piggyback off that last question real quick before I jump into this one? All right, I just wanted to say that for Goldlink, just going back to the reflections, right? You know, as a person who is an artist and as a producer living that life every day, like, I understand that Goldlink's music is a reflection of his life. He's lived, like you said, from Maryland to Virginia to D.C., and that's why his palette of music is different. That's why he's able to... He understands what to incorporate. Not even just what to incorporate, that's just who he is. It's what made him. So therefore, when he first came out, before he had Crew, before he had all of these records, he had mainly pop records. He was rapping over pop stuff, like fast-paced pop dance records. And that's what cultivated his following. That's why when Crew dropped, it went gold and then platinum so fast because people didn't even know that he created his fan base in a pop, sub-pop genre world, you know, which is an entirely different world. And then he crossed over to Crew. And so I just wanted to piggyback on that because it speaks to the understanding why he incorporates so many genres. It's because of the life he's lived, just like the Go-Go community. We mainly only do hip-hop covers because hip-hop is the only thing that's been covered in their lives, you know? And so that's why it's so just hip-hop and Go-Go. They don't do a lot of covers of 21 Pilots or other bands, you know, that's in different genres. But back to my question.
Hip-hop.
So, hip-hop. Hip-hop. Is I believe you had hip hop here with Kokai and Priest and Nomad and people before me, Nonchalant, who did 5 o'clock in the morning. Where you going to be? Outside on the corner. Yeah, I love that record. But with all due respect, but she didn't really have a movement behind that as well. But it was so successful. It was a very successful record. I think the difference between what me and Wale did was we got together, involved Go-Go and hip hop in a way that people outside the area can digest it. And then when that happened, it was like, whoa, wait a minute. People in New Orleans really like this new wave of go-go. People in LA are saying that they like go-go. People in Milwaukee are saying they like go-go because of how we, you know, on the creative side, speaking about me and Craig, you know, making my cousin Craig B, that was my partner with Best Kept Secret at the time, we merged the music. And we merged the music to a way because we was like, man, we want go-go to spread. And so... Because of all of that, you know, now that we, you know, we have the music business, you know, with the success of me and Wale and Craig B with that music, now the music business is looking towards DC because now we've made some money. That's what it comes down to. Oh, they're making money? All right, let's go see what's happening in DC. And that was the beginning of everything.
That's a lot of the time what it comes down to. We're going to have to take a short break. On our way to this break, we'll be hearing Bandwagon Jumping Machine by DC band Pyramid Scheme. I'm Kojo Nandi.
Dream. They use the ignorance of the world as leverage to thrive, making this the land of the free where opportunity is high. Don't get it twisted, I love it, cause you can be something. Cause many
of that's America by one of our guests today, Tone P. That was Tone P and Natalie's pick, actually, for the show. Kayla, one hip-hop artist who's been blowing up over the past few years is Largo, Maryland's Rico Nasty. Here's a bit of what Rico Nasty sounds like.
I'm a poppin' imp, but let me remind ya. Don't hide, I can always come and find ya. Ain't no f***ing me, come proper. In a Audi going fast, you behind us. I'm a poppin' imp, let me remind ya. Don't hide, I can always come and find ya. Ain't no f***ing me, come proper.
You've called Rico Nasty's rhymes cathartic. Who is she and what kind of energy is she bringing to the hip-hop scene right now?
Rico is everything. So she's a local artist, a rapper, and she brings this kind of just fire, like pure flames on her records that, you know, you listen to them and you're like, wow, okay, now I want to punch someone in the face. Like that's that's what she wants you to feel. And it is cathartic if you've had like a long day, if you're stressed, if you throw in some Rico, she'll make you feel better because she is also angry, and but in the best way. And she conveys that in her music in a way where we can all just vibe with it. And she's talked about that before, where, you know, kind of rage is what is fueling everything. And that rage can be heard in her music. And it's a good rage. I like it.
On to the phones. Here's Barbara in Burtonsville, Maryland. Barbara, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Koji. I go by Bobby most of the time. Anyway, back in 2000, I owned Hollywood Ballroom. I sold it in 2011. But anyway, this fellow Rashi came and he wanted to rent out the ballroom. He had a bunch of, I call them garage bands, go-go kids that were playing, and he wanted to have a venue where they could play. You know, he's just renting it out for one Saturday. And I think they had about 300 kids. They had a lot of kids there. But each time, and they had proper security inside and out, those kids were so good. He'd get on the mic and he'd say, Mrs. Bobby is letting us use her beautiful ballroom, and you need to be respectful of it. And the kids were. There wasn't trash on the floor. Even the ladies in men's room didn't have trash, and that's unusual. But we were harassed so bad by Montgomery County Police. They didn't want anything to do with hip-hop in Montgomery County of the kind. And I'm just wondering, some of those garage bands, if any of them are the famous ones now.
Well, you bring me to the next issue I wanted to raise, and that is what happened here in the District of Columbia, where there used to be a lot of go-go bands based here in the city. They still play here in the city, but very few are still based here. Natalie Hopkinson, earlier this year, issues of local music, gentrification, race, local culture all came to a head in the Don't Mute DC movement. It's something that you and Tone P have been working on an oral history about. Briefly, for listeners who may not know, what is Don't Mute DC, and what do you see as its relevance to the future of music in the district? And by the way, its relationship to what our caller just said.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so thing about go-go, just to address what the caller said, that is a scene that has replayed all over this region. And unfortunately, the music really got criminalized. It got stigmatized with all of the social ills of the 80s and 90s, you know, drug addiction, guns out of control. Somehow the congas got blamed for that. I don't know how that happened, but it happened. So it's been really difficult for bands. So that's why when I talked about the bounce beat bands really struggling to have a place, I mean, literally, they are struggled to have a place. You know, when you have police that are against it, when you have curfew laws that are targeted against go-go, for instance, they had curfew laws applied to go-go's, but they did not apply to ballets or other types of art, you know, to just give you an example of how stigmatized the music has been. And so, you know, you have Donald Campbell, who also is one of these, he owned one of these venues like the Hollywood Ballroom that she's talking about. He had owned multiple clubs around U Street, lost all of those. They were targeted, lost his liquor license. And so he had a go-go store and also sold cell phones on the side. And so part of the reason why he would be playing music outside was that he thought go-go was dying. And so he started playing from 1995 up until this April, until you know, they got some complaints over the last couple of years as U Street has gentrified to turn off his music. And eventually it went all the way to, these complaints went all the way to T-Mobile, who he had a contract with to sell cell phones out of his store. They ordered the silencing of his music, and his supporters really rose up. They were very angry because they were like, where is our music? Like, it doesn't feel like 7th and Florida unless Go-Go is blasting on that corner. And so that gave birth to the Don't Mute DC movement. There was a student at Howard created this hashtag, Don't Mute DC. Ronald Moten and I created a petition that built on the hashtag Don't Mute DC Music and Culture, got 80,000 signatures. There were musical demonstrations all over the city, and the music is back on, thankfully. But the battle has not ended, because again, they still struggle to get place for the music. We still struggle to have music education in the schools. We're still struggling with gentrification, which has displaced a lot of go-go bands. So it's a movement that's ongoing.
Tone P. Rare Essence recorded a song with you called Don't Mute DC. Let's listen to a little bit of that. Talk about the underlying issues, Stone P, that culminated in Don't Mute DC, because you travel around the country and you realize that this is not unique.
No, it's not, actually. It's funny because, well, no, it's not. Nothing's funny about it, actually. I travel in and out of New York, in and out of New Orleans, in and out of L.A., Atlanta. Yeah, and the thing is, it's gentrification is happening, you know, everywhere. I mean, and what makes it, the thing about it is, like I told Donald Campbell, like, it's not the fact that things change, right? Things always change. You have to get, that's just a part of life. Things would, nothing stays the same forever. But what makes it, you know, difficult and hard to process is when things are changing, and because of your demographic as a company or as a store, you decide not to include that business owner in the discussion of change. And so when change happens, he looks around and is like, well, what's going on? And he wasn't a part of the U Street restoration change gentrification project, and he gets left out, and then he ends up getting pressured out. You know, that's my point. And that same thing is happening all over the country, and that needs to be addressed.
It just happened in New Orleans, too.
I was about to say, Kayla Randall, you are from New Orleans, yeah, which has, of course, its own unique musical traditions from jazz, second line, bounce. And Don't Mute NOLA was recently trending in response to a street musician being arrested on Frenchman Street, where musicians traditionally play. How important is it to you that Washington works toward preserving its unique musical exports, such as go-go?
It's incredibly important. I find regional music to be the heartbeat of a city, always. So in New Orleans, like, the heart of New Orleans is the brass band. You know, there, you can't go anywhere without hearing brass band music. And I wouldn't have it any other way. And here, I feel the same about go-go. I feel like it's the city's job to preserve regional music. It really is. And, you know, there should be dedicated arts funding for regional music to make museums, to do lectures and concerts and things like that, to educate the people who may move in and out of the region on what that regional music is, why it should be protected, and why it should be respected.
Aaron Frisbee, you are also from New Orleans.
Yes.
Was it a surprise to you that a street musician in a place where street musicians have been popular for generations gets arrested for playing music on the street?
It's unfortunately not a surprise, but it's a painful reality. I think that growing up somewhere where live music and people dancing in the street and people just stopping and participating in music everywhere is a way of life is just an absolute joy, and I would wish that for everyone. I think that, unfortunately, you always have to like see, okay, where is the power? Where's the money coming from? And there's always this undercurrent of consumerism when people are trying to shut down people's music like that. And I just want to encourage people to love and support their local and regional music, even if it's not like your exact thing that you love, just because it's our right and we should hold on to it. It's our right to get together and make and enjoy and share art together. And it's part of our power, so let's not give it away.
Here's Nina in D.C. Nina, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Kojo. I'm a huge fan of your show. Love it so much. You're such a big part of D.C., and I really appreciate this astute panel of guests you have on. To Aaron's point, hi, Aaron.
Hi.
I think in D.C., there's this immense opportunity for non-full-time professional musicians to also be a part of this scene and to grow with it and support the incredible amount of talent and passion and creativity coming out of this city. I work full-time, not in music, but I'm also able to be in three different bands. And every single night of the week, I could go out in D.C. and the greater DMV and see just amazing, diverse, smart, heartfelt music coming out of this city. And to be a part of it, not only just being in bands and having so many opportunities to meet up with other musicians, there's so many jams and open mics happening here, again, across the DMV that are very open-armed and encouraging and thought-provoking and welcoming. And I don't know if that happens in every city, but that is one of the reasons. I've been here over 20 years, and I've seen it grow, and I'm so grateful to be in a city that encourages that and has so many talented artists like the ones you're mentioning today coming out of the city. So
thank you very much for your call, Nina. Natalie Hopkinson, you've written extensively about the history of go-go, which between the Don't Mute D.C. protests and the recent performance at the BET Awards featuring D.C. natives Regina Hall and members of Rare Essence and EU Experience Unlimited, is now presumably somewhat in the local and national spotlight. But just how vibrant is the current go-go scene in Washington?
I mean, I think it's very vibrant. You know, oftentimes it's sort of like pushed over the D.C. line, back over the Maryland line, and sort of like constantly being displaced. But that's also sort of part of the culture. But your listeners are always the smartest and the best, because that's actually like an important point that she made about being part-time musicians. Right after the BET Awards, I was at practice for this performance called The Royal Pocket that we did during the Smithsonian Folklife Festival. And Mighty Mo Higgins was there, legendary conga player. He had just performed at the BET Awards, where they flashed the Don't Mute DC sign. And he talked about coming to perform on the Mall the next week. And he was like, oh, no, I just got off. I just got off my supervisor. He's a postman. He said, they just let me off to go to L.A. for the BET Awards. I don't know that I'm going to get off on Saturday again. And so I joked to him. I said, well, you know, you're on BET, you're national. I was like, you know, maybe you can let go of that job. He was like, oh, no. I'm never doing that. You know, and so that's sort of like, you know, to what Aaron's point about being part of the community, you know, so they're part of the community. So it's not, the end result is not, like, success is not always, you know, multiple platinum, you know, so there's that sort of like vibrancy that music and live music in particular brings to a community that we've been so rich, you know, like other cities like New Orleans have been rich in. I think people know less about the DC tradition, but it's here and it's been here for a long time.
Thank you for your call, Nina. Here's Eric in Prince George's County. Eric, your turn.
Hello. Hi, Kojo. Really appreciate the program. I just wanted to mention a few artists that I've met throughout the DMV area. One guy, he's been blowing up a lot lately. His name is Blue Young Prince, spelled B-E-A-U, Young Prince. He's actually featured on the animated Spider-Verse movie. He has a track on there called Let Go. I also want to shout out Jenna Camille. She's a local artist. You can pretty much see her everywhere throughout D.C., U Street, Amnes Morgan, one of my favorite spots is probably the Songbird. And I see a lot of amazing artists coming up from from D.C. I just love the rawness of the new talent.
Thank you very much for your call. Before we go to break, Aaron Frisbee, there's a lot of nostalgia in D.C. for the glory days of both Kogo and hardcore punk. What do you think about the ways that people talk about old school punk and go-go? Do you think that kind of nostalgia is a problem?
No, that's such a multifaceted thing. I think going back to what we were talking about earlier and mentioning gentrification, in some ways, especially when you're approaching issues of gentrification, you have to look at the art that has come before you as sacred ground, and you need to treat it as such. And I think that in some ways, the embracing of go-go citywide as a point of pride is long overdue, and is a correction, and is something that we should be blasting out to the rest of the world and being really proud of. And the same for the punk movement. I think that we inherited a lot of really great ethics from that movement. I think that our ability to do things ourselves, to just get shows together, to make them accessible for people, that a lot of that comes from that punk scene, and it's definitely worth keeping alive and celebrating. The only thing I would say is to be careful when you're looking back and becoming nostalgic to see whose voices weren't represented. To say, hey, I know that there were probably other people either making music or who wanted to make music who potentially didn't have access at the time. That's one thing that This Could Go Boom is doing a lot, is we're focusing on women and non-binary people in music here in DC. And there are some extremely great bands in the region who fall into that demographic, who are just dying to be heard and deserve to be heard.
Natalie, has cultural nostalgia played any kind of role in gentrification in Washington?
So I appreciate that answer too, because I agree. You know, I think you forget your history, and like, what are we, you know, without, we're recreating things that we've already created and trying to understand things that we already understand. But I also think that, you know, we had conversations with DCPS, right? So we're talking about ways to incorporate music, go-go, in education in the school system, because really DCPS is one of the patrons of go-go. They started the first marching band. They were really part of, like, it wouldn't exist without music programs. And so, you know, when you're talking about doing, you know, bringing those back, I don't think it's to the point of saying, okay, we need to do that same beat that Chuck did or that Rare Essence did. And so that's why it's really been exciting for me to talk to Tone P about a lot of these things, because there is ways to sort of embrace the past while moving forward. Like, I can't wait to hear what the next generation, like, give them some instruments, give them some instructions. I can't wait to hear what they come up with next. Maybe it sounds like go-go. Maybe it sounds like, I don't know what it'll sound
trap
like.
Bounce.
Trap Bounce.
Trap Bounce. That, yeah.
Speak on that.
Trap Bounce.
Yeah.
Trap Bounce is an album that I'm creating that involves exactly what you just said, honoring the past, but moving forward with something new that the kids, because my son is 11, and what he's intrigued by and what he listens to is different from what I was listening to, which is different from what Andre Whiteboy from Rare Essence was listening to, which is different from what Chuck was listening to. So right now, with the energy that's surrounding Go-Go right now, I got a tape called Trap Bounce, which embodies trap music and bounce beat from Go-Go. And I got all the new high upcoming artists that's in the rap world, merging them with the Go-Go world as well, over a sound. So it's a side A, side B tape, originals on side A, go-go versions on side B, with the artist in the go-go band. So, boom.
Got to take a short break. And on our way to this break, you're going to be hearing Falling Water by Eastern Maryland native Maggie Rogers. That was Kayla's pick, by the way.
Spell.
That's Warfare Queen by local rock band Santa Librada, and that was Aaron Frisbee's pick. Before we go to Aaron, though, Tone P, has the rise of streaming and digital and the phasing out of CDs changed how go-go recordings are distributed now?
That conversation goes higher than go-go. I would just say music in general. Yeah, because, you know, albums are becoming shorter because the pace of music is so rapid that the pace of music being available is a lot faster because of the digital streaming platform. So, you know, back then you had to process and put a CD into production, and that took time. But now you can make a CD and it goes literally into distribution to the world within a day, you know. So, yeah, I think even for go-go, you know, the process, I think, honestly, the PA system, you know, speaking specifically on go-go, I think PA recordings changed the dynamic of the go-go culture in general, because, you know, instead of it's the pace, it's faster, you know, it's more rapid. You can, like we did on the Palisades parade,
yeah,
we had, you know, go-go band members
for 4th of July,
yeah. We had Backyard T.O.B., the front runners from Backyard T.O.B. and TCB, Black Bow, and we recorded the entire performance on a PA system, and it was done right there.
And we played it.
And we played it going back. So that's, yeah, how fast that was, yeah, versus going into a studio, spending money on a studio to record your song for five, you know, X amount of dollars, versus a PA system, and you could put it out right then and there. So that really changed the dynamic of go-go with recording, for sure.
Aaron, you've taken a different approach to music distribution, starting a nonprofit record label. Tell us about your label. It's called This Could Go Boom.
Yeah, so This Could Go Boom is only a year old. We came out of deeply heartfelt discussions around my kitchen table between myself and my band members in the 06. We're an all-woman rock band, and we wanted to put out a record. We were getting a lot of requests from fans to put out a record. We considered doing a crowdfunder, but we didn't want the project to just end there. We wanted to leave something lasting and something that was going to really connect with community, something that would be bigger than us and move beyond us. And so we started a 501c3 called This Could Go Boom. We're putting out our first record, which is that crowdfunder record, the 06 debut, on October 4th. And then shortly after that, we'll be announcing some other local and regional artists that we're going to be putting out for the year.
Here is Nikki, or Nikhil, in Washington. Nikhil, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Koja. Thank you for having me on. I'm 16 years old. I'm from the Washington, D.C. area. And for my whole life, I've been a big fan of hip-hop music from this area. And one thing that I wanted to stress about the importance of go-go in this area is how much it impacts the upcoming generation of hip-hop artists such as Light Show, Wale, Inanna James, Goldlink. All these artists are using go-go, using the music they listen to as they grew up, using all those influences in the lyrics and in the beats of music that's now being signed to major record labels and going completely international, going, you know, nationwide, selling millions of copies. It's putting go-go on the national stage through hip-hop music, through that influence. And I think that's another reason why that kind of influence should be preserved.
Okay.
And if you don't mind me saying this, I actually have a hip-hop museum and a go-go kind of museum coming in D.C. to Union Market September 28th of this year, whose one of its main goals is to preserve go-go and the history of music in the D.C. area.
Okay, we're running out of time very quickly. How old are you, Nikhil?
I'm 16 years old.
16 years old, and on top of it.
Right.
Let's talk about the business aspect of it, Tone. You spent time in Atlanta, one of the centers of the music mm-hmm. industry. A lot of artists moved there or to places like New York or L.A. to try to break into the industry. But you came back. How important do you think industry infrastructure like labels, management, and PR are for artists who want to make a living from their music? And how much of that exists in Washington today?
Well, it's funny, man, because that is everything. Like, for an artist, like, the difference between an artist going national and being local is the business scene. Like, I Rico Nasty, you know, she's dope, and I love her talent, but she also has a great manager, which is her boyfriend, by the way. And I think his Instagram is, I think, don't do say underscore. And he's amazing, you know, and he makes, you know, he's allowed, with any creative, you need a person that handles the business just as much as you work on being a creative. And that's the dynamic that, you know, as far as a collective music industry, that's what Atlanta offers, because it's been working on music for years, you know, in a national capacity. So it's LA, so it's New York. In DC, I think, you know, with the emergence of what me and Wale has accomplished, going back to what the girl just said, you know, keeping those influences in front of you, because I stay getting people coming back to me saying, man, y'all influenced us to do Internet James, the people she just named, Goldlink. They all have said stuff, you know, around, like, you know, praising either Wale or me or both of us, you know, for that. And I think because of that, I came back specifically, you know, because I wanted to represent the music industry for here and bring my resources and be that reflection for here, you know, because I'm signed Universal. You know, I deal with labels all the time. And so I wanted to make sure I extend my resources by coming back and not just keeping it to myself and running to Atlanta, you know.
While there are some musicians who are able to make a living exclusively off of their music, most cannot, and that's been going on for a long time. I'm thinking of the great Buck Hill, the jazz saxophonist, who spent his entire career working as a mailman while making jazz in D.C. because he couldn't afford to live here. But Natalie Hopkinson, musicians in D.C. have the chance to fill out the district's first ever music census. The deadline to fill it out, by the way, is today. What's the census? What kind of information are district officials trying to gather with it?
So I don't know a whole lot about the D.C. Music Census other than it came out of a conference that Georgetown organized last year around the local music scene. And this was some initiative of the mayor's office. And so they decided to do this, you know, D.C. Music Census. That will help them to give a, you know, unfortunately, we have to quantify these issues. I mean, we could talk all day about anecdotally what the experiences of DC musicians are, but this will be the first time that we have like a really accurate picture of how big the scene is. How many people are we talking about? How many people are employed part-time? And so ultimately, I think that, you know, just like some of the other policy-related movements, you know, around DCPS, around, you know, there's a movement to have Go-Go become the official music of Washington, D.C. There's legislation to do that. Ultimately, it's an opportunity to provide some investment, right. You know. So New Orleans is known for what it is. Atlanta is known for what it is because there were investments made in it.
Yep.
And so, you know, so I think it's great to count, and I think it's great to, like, create legislation and recognize, but it means absolutely nothing unless they put some money behind it.
I say that only because we only have about a minute left. Erin, did you fill out the music census?
I did, and I agree. I think that the follow-through is going to be what we're looking for, and I would encourage everyone to fill that out today, and also to remember that if you're making music, you're a musician. You don't have to hold back just because you think, oh, I'm not performing full-time, I'm not making all of my money from being a musician. You're making music, you're a musician.
And we're almost out of time, Kayla, but house shows are great for smaller shows. But what are some of your favorite venues for larger crowds in this region?
I love the Anthem. Going to the Anthem for the first time, you're like, whoa, okay. the Anthem is a great venue, and they have been putting on some great shows. I do love Songbird, 930 Club, U Street Music Hall, and Union Stage, too, which is newer but is really great. Union Stage is
pretty dope. And I'm afraid that's about all the time we have. Kayla Randall, Erin Frisbee, Natalie Hopkinson, Tone P, thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Today's show was produced by Mark Gunnery. Coming up tomorrow, all jurisdictions in our region are set to ban the sale of tobacco to people under the age of 21, so we'll check in on the state of smoking and vaping in the region. Plus, we'll meet the playwright and actor behind Twisted Melodies, the one-man show about legendary singer Donnie Hathaway's final night alive. It all starts tomorrow at noon. Hope you tune in. On our way out, we're hearing Bad Idea by YBN Cordae, featuring Chance the Rapper, and a chorus inspired by another musician who used to live around here, Gil Scott-Heron. Thank you all for listening. I'm Kojo Nambi.
Yeah, I know myself far too well to be a stranger of pain. Despite it all, we remaining the same. I'm just changing the game. Heart pure, never tainted with fame. Straight ahead, I'ma stay in my lane. Never switching courses, life's amazing. It's gorgeous, looking at the bigger picture portrait, and I smile wide. Performed a song and the crowd cried. How can I lie? I'm tearing up as I'm starting to stare in y'all eyes. I know that you going through the last month.
You stressing as you hitting on that glass blunt. Praying to get lucky like Daft Punk. You can't even stomach the pain. Now that's a bad lunch. Ramen noodles on the regular. Add some seasoning and some hot sauce for a better touch. Peanut butter, jelly, and syrup, sandwich, etc. And we just flying in the nebula. And it might not be such a bad idea if I never went home again. See, it might not be such a bad idea if I never went home again. Don't you cry, little baby, it'll be alright. Don't you cry, little baby, it's gonna be alright. I done been around the world 4 times looking for parking. Finally found a condo that still feel like apartment. Out south, my foul mouth started sounding like Cartman. Roundabout like cartwheels, hopped inside of a U-Haul, confused where all my art went. Monsters in a quiet place. Some of these decisions is like Sharpie on a dry erase. I know they thought I wouldn't, but I'm fireplace. I had my cake and ate it too. That is in a quiet taste. I promised I would buy a place. I got my favorite roommates. They used to never see me like when you.